cash offers are for thousands less than the home is actually worth. Josh's offer is different. It's for the full market value. You can still get advantage of all the same conveniences as those lowball offers, but there's no need to have strangers in your home during an open house, and there's no need to make those expensive repairs. You can sell your home as is and move on a timeline that works for you. But with Josh Hysaw, you can walk away with more money in your pocket. If you want a cash offer, don't leave money on the table. Give my buddy Josh a phone call at 901-461-8147, or you can visit his website, joshhasthebuyers.com. Also, if you want to sell your home for even more, let Josh sell it the traditional way. His marketing system reaches thousands of potential home buyers every day and helps him sell homes fast and for top dollar. He's so confident that he can sell your home that he guarantees it risk-free. You can also visit his website, joshhasthebuyers.com, joshhasthebuyers.com, or give him a phone call, 901-461-8147, and start packing today. Let's talk some college football when we come back, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
All right, Tim. Over at ESPN.com, they have ranked the offseason of the Power Four teams. They went through each conference and ranked them, but here are the overall top 10 off seasons. Number one, the defending national champion, Indiana Hoosiers. Indiana isn't going anywhere after winning its first national title, putting together an offseason that sets up the team for even more success. The coaching staff continuity is staggering.
Even more success?
That's what they're saying.
That's a weird phrase considering they went 16-0, had the Heisman Trophy winner.
Maybe but continued okay. success would be the...
That would be a better way to write that, but okay.
In fairness, hey, I might have written it. The coaching staff continuity is staggering, and Indiana addressed clear portal needs at quarterback, wide receiver, and pass rusher, while retaining core players at the offensive line, defensive tackle, and linebacker. I mean, this really does, like, we can dumb it down, though. It's like, can Josh Hoover transition from being a little bit erratic at TCU, turnover prone, and have the same type of transition that Fernando Mendoza had when he got to Indiana?
I mean, look, I think this is fair to say. Josh Hoover is a better prospect than Fernando Mendoza was coming in last year.
Yes.
People now will have revisionist history, but we did a list on this show, and I did it on my show, and I just looked at it the other day, of a top 10 returning quarterbacks, and I did not have Fernando Mendoza in the top 10.
I didn't even consider him.
I didn't even have him in my honorable mention.
No, I didn't either.
So, Josh Hoover coming into this year, you can make a darn good case that he's a top 10 quarterback in college football. I don't know if it was... I want to preface it this way. I'm not saying that Indiana is going away. I think we are overlooking how vital some of those James Madison guys that went to Indiana were. And now you had Fernando Mendoza, and it seemed like it was just the perfect marriage. And you get the center from Notre Dame, Coogan, who was perfect, and he wins Rose Bowl MVP or whatever. I agree with the premise. They're not going anywhere. They are one of the best teams in college football returning. It seems like the coaching staff is elite. But I just have a bit of a hesitation because Fernando Mendoza just seemed to be the absolute perfect fit for everything they had going on there. And, you know, Indiana lost D'Angelo Pons. Indiana lost the Heisman Trophy winner. Indiana lost Elijah Surratt. They lost a lot from last year's national title team. They went out. They got some really good running backs. They got Nick Marsh from Michigan State. Like, they're definitely going to be back, but I think we've finally, and maybe this is famous last words because I didn't buy in on Indiana being a title team last year, but I think we've finally caught up to what Indiana is right now.
I don't think I bought in on them as a title team until the Big Ten championship game.
I agree. I thought Ohio State would beat them. And now Ohio State melted down in the red zone.
Missed a chip shot field goal. But, I mean, that's the thing. It's like that Indiana played that game exactly how they had to play it to win it.
Sure. And then they went into the playoff and destroyed everybody. Like, but you're losing the Heisman Trophy winner, your top two running backs, your top two wide receivers, your best defensive player. Like, there's a lot of pieces that are out the door. Aiden Fisher was a guy that felt like, you know, another James Madison guy. So I'm fascinated to see how this team does rebuild, because I think it was a perfect storm of, you still had James Madison guys that were with Cignetti. You were able to spend big in the portal and get a guy like Fernando Mendoza and get offensive linemen like Pat Coogan and others. And now you're coming back. You've spent big on your quarterback. You've spent big on running backs and wide receiver. And you're going to be good, but it's going to be hard, obviously, to replicate what you did a year ago, which was go 16-0 in the best conference in college football at the top.
Now, the one thing that I do think they are giving credit to, because this applies next to Miami at 2, it is fascinating, and I know you and I talked about this during the season, that Indiana, which has become what everyone's trying to emulate, go find your Cignetti. They've kept their offense and defensive coordinators after back-to-back seasons, one of a playoff season and then a national title year. That doesn't feel like it happens very often, but Miami's in the same situation where they keep their offense and defensive coordinators, and they're giving a lot of credence to that.
Yeah, and look, 2 years ago, you look at Miami, their defense was the reason that they didn't make the playoff.
Yes.
The offense was clearly good enough to get to the playoff. And Mario Cristobal went out and got a really good defensive coordinator, right? Corey Heatherman comes in, and you look at what they were capable of doing. Now, all of these teams that we're going to talk about, whether it be Indiana, whether it be Ohio State, Notre Dame, etc., they all lost really good players. Miami loses their quarterback, loses the two most havoc-wreaking players they had in Bane and Mesidor. So,
and bullies up front.
Right. So their defense, which was kind of their calling card, especially like you think back to that season opener against Notre Dame, you're like, whoa, this team looks different up front. And now, where are you on Mensa? I'm not the biggest Mensa guy. I think he's a little bit overrated, but he's certainly better than what they were going to have coming in.
Like, I think I actually like Mensa. I think he knows how to play quarterback. I think given Beck's limitations with the injury, I think Mensa could be an upgrade, because that's the other thing. You and I lost a ton of money on Duke games last year. Yeah. He did have the one game where I felt like, what are you doing? You're an idiot. Have you ever played football?
Georgia Tech?
No, the Illinois game.
Oh, God, that was...
He just kept throwing it to that linebacker that would just sit back on the RPO, and he just kept throwing it right to him. But there were so many other times where he's making throws, and I'm going, nobody else can do that, and then, like, guys just dropped it.
So I will say, in Miami's favor, so whether you think it's an upgrade or not, we'll just call it a wash for argument's sake. You bring in a good quarterback, Mark Fletcher's back, and their wide receiver room is better because Malachi Toney's going to continue to get better, and he's an elite playmaker. And Cooper Barkate, the kid they brought in from Duke, was Mensa's go-to guy at Duke, and he's like 30 years old, played in the Ivies, went to Duke, really effective, and somehow he still has eligibility. And he's going to be a really good complement to Malachi Toney. So, yeah, their offseason, it looked like it was going to be bad, right? For a moment, it was like, what's going on? They don't have a quarterback. And then they're able to, shockingly, get Darian Mensa and Barkate to go to Miami. And now you look at it very differently.
What do we think of this Indiana schedule? All right, they have 3 bye games basically to start the year.
Loaded non-con.
North Texas, Howard, Western Kentucky.
And remember, North Texas lost everyone from last
Correct.
Year. They're all at Oklahoma State.
Northwestern at home, at Rutgers, at Nebraska.
You're 6-0 going into the Ohio State game.
Ohio State at home. At Michigan. I've talked myself into losing. They're definitely losing one of them. You could talk me into they actually lose both. I think
the Nebraska game is kind of a funky spot, even though Cignetti, I'll give him a lot of credit for this. He does a great job in situational spots.
And also, rules got a problem.
Right.
All right, then Minnesota
They're
at home.
Starting the UNLV kid, right?
Yeah.
Nebraska? Yeah, that's not going to be good.
Calandria.
Loves turning the ball over.
He does. He's a poor man's Mateer, though. He can be fun.
No, yeah. No, watching him in the Mountain West was fun. But now
he will throw some head scratchers. Minnesota at home. Then a bye week. USC at home. At Washington, Purdue.
I would say, so the stretch obviously is that month right there. Ohio State is arguably the best team in the country, pound for pound, but you get them at home. Then after you play that game, you got to go on the road to Michigan. Who knows what that's going to be like. The Minnesota game, so I had Brad Powers, college football handicapper, on my podcast this week, and he's really high on Minnesota. Not to say they're going to win the Big Ten, but he just thinks they're better than you expect. Now, is this fake ID thing going to be an issue? I would assume not, right? Their quarterback?
That will be handled internally. I will say this, though. In the year 2026, somebody's starting quarterback getting popped for a fake ID feels very, outdated.
Wait, your quarterback's not 30?
Correct.
What are you doing these days?
Hasn't Drake Lindsey been there a minute?
Maybe he's like me. He was a September birthday. Maybe he's a young guy. Young summer birthday.
That was just one of those.
By the way, can I just ask this? You know, I'm 38 now, so I think the statute's gone. I had my fake ID taken at least twice in college, maybe three times. And the bartender or the bouncer just put it in his pocket and was like, get out of my face. We're arresting people nowadays for fake IDs? Or did he show a fake ID to a cop?
That is a great...
That's a horse of a different color. If you're so hammered that you're showing a cop a fake ID, you're in some trouble. But, I remember vividly going to two bars and the bartender or the bouncer just being like, nope, and just in his pocket. And I'm like, damn.
All right. So according to the preliminary report, so he's from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Okay.
So he was back in Fayetteville, I guess, hanging out with the high school boys.
Okay.
According to a preliminary report from the Fayetteville Police Department, an officer was alerted by the staff at the Yee Hog Bar shortly after midnight about a possible fake identification document. Staff directed a police officer to Lindsay, 20, who admitted to having the fake identification and to consuming alcohol before arriving at the bar. Fayetteville, Arkansas native was taken to the Washington County Detention Center. A copy of the fake ID was discovered in his wallet. Lindsay signed a form for a minor in possession of alcohol, attempted use of fraudulent or altered identification document. He was released about 7 hours after posting a $470 bond. So my instinct says if he was just at the bar trying to use the ID, the bouncer would have taken it and said, get out of here. My gut says he was causing problems.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, you got to know when to go.
Right, and then when they're handing you over, they don't just hand you over to the cops without earning it.
And it's not like it's like Arch Manning, where it's like, oh man, this might be an advantage for us moving forward this year. It's Drake Lindsey.
Well, and on top of that, that is the most quarterback agnostic team ever. They have the same guy. Max Brosmer is going to show up at some point. It's just, they just have another guy that looks like every single one of them.
25-year-old quarterback.
Yeah.
But back to Indiana's schedule. Yeah, they're probably looking at one or two losses. More than likely going to be a playoff team in the discussion. Heading into the year, there's five teams right now that are looked at as the favorites to going into this season. In no particular order, it's Ohio State, Indiana, Notre Dame, Oregon, and Georgia, Texas. And then Georgia's like just a hair behind those five. So it's like really six if you want to throw Georgia into it.
Well, I'm glad you
discussion.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Because do we need to have a conversation where it feels like we always just give Oregon this benefit of the doubt, like that they're peak Saban Alabama? When they don't have a ton to show for it.
I think Oregon might be really good this year.
I'm worried about Dante Moore showed some real wuss tendencies. When you put the zone read mesh on the ground just because the defensive end crashes, that's a problem.
Oregon, similarly to like Ohio State, doesn't really need to go that hard in the portal, but when they go, they make some big moves. Like they got that safety from Minnesota that was pretty nasty.
They're also replacing their offensive coordinator.
Yeah, no, you're right. And defense coordinator. They lost both their coordinators.
Now, I'm a little bit more willing to give him a pass on defense because I think it's kind of the Lanning, Saban. You know, again, in the end, it's his defense. So Oregon's schedule is Boise, at Oklahoma State, Portland State, and then USC comes to the Coliseum to close out September. Bye week.
You said USC goes to the Coliseum. Who goes?
I'm sorry. Oregon goes to USC.
Got it. Okay.
In the Coliseum.
Got it.
Bye week. Then they close out with eight straight games. UCLA, home. Nebraska, home. At Illinois. That's going to be like the troll game of the year. Lanning versus Burt in the buildup. Like, that's just going to be tremendous stuff. I need them both to deliver on the content. Northwestern at home. Then they got to go to Columbus. They host Michigan, go to Sparty, and they host Washington. So you avoid Penn State, and like that's the other thing. I've talked myself into Penn State this year simply because of the schedule.
Schedule's very doable.
Very, very friendly.
And that's Matt Campbell's specialty.
Oh,
off
yeah.
Off the radar.
Oh.
When he has expectations, it doesn't work. By the way, November 7th, quite the day we have in store. You've got Oregon at Ohio State. You've got BYU at Utah, Holy War. We've got Alabama at LSU, Miami at Notre Dame.
Also that week,
Penn State, Washington, if you want to throw it in there.
Well, we'd also have Georgia at Ole Miss.
Oh, did I skip that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Alabama, LSU.
Yeah. Georgia, Ole Miss. I missed that one. Oklahoma, Florida.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's fine. Yeah, but November 7th is shaping up to be quite the day. I'll say this right now. Notre Dame, Miami, assuming that Notre Dame's undefeated heading into that game. That is going to be one of the most highly anticipated games in South Bend, probably since the Bush game. The anger that fan base has, right or wrong, at Miami. I don't have anger at Miami. It's not their fault that they beat them.
No, it's the committees for. They should have just. They
should have been. It should have been. I mean, Andy and Ari did it on their podcast this week. They got asked a question. I wasn't mad at Miami. I was mad at that Alabama was put in over Notre Dame. But regardless. When you're talking about fandom and the history of that rivalry and being back in South Bend and a night game in November, Miami could very well be undefeated too. I mean,
so
I think
Miami's schedule is fairly reasonable. So they start off with at Stanford. That's a Friday night of Labor Day weekend.
Yep.
Florida A&M at Wake. Central Michigan, and they got to go to Clemson to close out October.
But I think Clemson might stink this year.
Bye week, Florida State at home, Pitt at home, at UNC, Will Belichick be the coach by then?
33rd NFL team with no draft picks a year ago. That was pretty impressive. Yes.
Their schedule does not help them get off the mat.
North Carolina?
Yeah.
No. TCU in Dublin. FCS team at Clemson, Notre Dame, Pitt at Duke, at Pitt, at Duke, and then Miami shortly thereafter.
All right, the other team that's obviously going to be a big part of it,
mm-hmm.
now that we're a week removed and we've been starting to figure it out, what is your sniff? What does your sniffer say that the sore? Where's the Sorsby situation going?
I think he's going to go in the supplemental draft.
So
I know that he hired a lawyer.
Well, no, here would be the complication of the supplemental draft. If he's proven, like, the NFL has to take the gambling stuff seriously too.
They do, but. Okay, then they suspend him for a little bit. He's a third-string quarterback. I think it gets quietly just kind of goes away if he goes in the supplemental draft. Now, I don't know where he's evaluated at.
Feels very third-roundy to me.
Yeah, so is a team willing to give up a third-round pick for him? Sure. Maybe. I don't know. I don't think they do the Terrell Pryor BS, which was...
keep the suspension
for 5 games.
Yeah.
I don't think they do that. I mean, the tricky thing is the Indiana thing, the betting on Indiana when you're redshirted is the issue, right? It technically speaking, betting on those Reds games was a violation, but the NFL won't care about that. I think it's the betting on Indiana, kind of like Calvin Ridley putting in 8-leg parlays that included the Falcons on it when he was hurt, right?
Yeah, I think the other problem, though, about the Indiana thing is it still begs the question, who knew about that and when, right?
Yeah, does this ever come back to Cincinnati?
I think it has to.
So is Cincinnati at some point? Now, Cincinnati isn't a current football program that is in love with their coach, right?
Well, I mean, there's the question of, is this an easy out?
Right. Can Satterfield be kicked to the curb based off of this? Hey, you allowed this guy. You didn't vet him. How did this not come out? You let him play. Did he do it while you were here? It does kind of feel like for Cincinnati, if they want to pull the ripcord on Satterfield, who I don't think they like anyways, if they can do the old, hey, we're going to fire you for cause.
I told Topmeyer this on Friday. There's a lot of protecting of yourself going on right here. There's still something about this that's not quite passing the smell test.
Like, how did this information get out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Now,
was very, very convenient too that around the time that we found out that he was getting sued by Cincinnati, this story dropped, right?
Well, we knew he was getting sued. What the detail that mattered to me was the day that it's announced he's going to gambling rehab. His legal team filed a motion in the state of Ohio to have the lawsuit from Cincinnati dismissed, which to me shows some form of organization. But this is another point that I've made that doesn't quite pass the smell test. Okay, I am not making light of gambling addiction, all the necessary caveats that you need.
Mm-hmm.
It is very difficult for me to believe, though, that somebody desperately needs gambling rehab when the other detail of the story is, since he's been in Texas, he's not gambled. Because in my experience with addicts, that would not be the moment that you're going to rehab. Now, it also makes sense of why that's the story, because if indeed Texas, as you and I have mentioned, is a state that doesn't have legalized sports gambling. So if he is gambling, he's doing it illegally.
Correct.
Or what I kind of think is more of the whole gambling rehab thing was just to soften this. I don't really think that they are truly worried about him as a gambler. I think they were trying to soften the punishment.
I agree. Like you said, I'm not trying to make light of it. Maybe he does have a serious issue. Plenty of people do. But it does feel like before everybody could rush to judgment and say, how could he possibly do this? Whoa, whoa, whoa. He's got to go to rehab. He's got to.
Correct. And that's the ultimate conversation ender.
And I do think, too, another question is, how hard does Texas Tech want to fight for him?
It seems like at this point, pretty hard.
Well, we're getting a story that Will Hammond might be ahead of schedule here.
I think they organized his legal defense. Now, I told you the ultimate 2026 college sports story will be when he keeps losing and he can't win, then that legal team will then turn around that was defending him and they will be the attorneys that are suing him to get the money back.
Oh, yeah. He's either playing or he's paying this money back.
Correct.
Do you think right now, has your mind changed? Do you think he plays?
My gut says they work out some type of structured settlement. He's going to miss, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 games. I think there's a lot of questions that people don't want answered.
And like I said, the NCAA, they love nothing more than someone else doing the work for them, and then they get to parachute in and say, suspended for a year. Our job is done.
What if they knew about the Indiana?
And just kind of kept it quiet?
Yep.
And there's a lot of ifs and buts in this whole story.
Well, the other thing is, it's like, who tipped who off? Because, like, if you want to use the Decker at Iowa State and all that, that got flagged by the, what do we call them, the monitoring systems. The services that everybody subscribes to. This did not apparently get flagged.
Yeah, I mean, him betting on the Reds games is not illegal.
And it wasn't flagged. By all reports, nothing was tied to any investigation. I don't know. There's a bunch here that just, I don't know. It's like, it's not passing the smell test. And I'm not even trying to make light of it because I fundamentally agree the thing you have to protect the most is the integrity of the game. I'm just not convinced that there seems to be everyone's kind of doing a lot of damage control. And it's like, there's a lot of questions I think people don't want answered. All right, let's take a quick break. We got more NBA action tonight. Let's talk about that and more of what's on the card, including an unbelievable stat that I saw from last night. We'll talk about that next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, boys. Here's our Dan Patrick would-be hit-the-sounder stat of the day. Following the Carolina Hurricanes' overtime win last night, the Carolina Hurricanes have won all 53 of the last 53 playoff wins for North Carolina pro sports teams. Because keep in mind, the Hornets play-in win does not count as a playoff.
Never existed.
I think they like call it postseason, maybe. But like the stats go into the ether.
Yeah.
Has it really been that long since the Panthers won a playoff game?
Was their last playoff win their run to the Super Bowl?
Had to be the,
I don't think they
did they not win
it.
Like a, I thought 1 year they went like 7-8-1 and
last playoff win was the Super Bowl season.
So the NFC Championship game.
Yep, that was January 24th, 2016 against the Cardinals.
I guess that makes sense. That's 10 years ago.
Yep, yeah. Hornets have been awful,
and they don't have a MLB team.
That still feels
wow.
Because that means like also 53 playoff wins, even with hockey and 7-game series. Like that's a lot of playoff wins.
And they still haven't made a Stanley Cup Finals.
Like, that's the other thing. It's like, that means you got to be really good. But, like yeah, they haven't even made a final since, what, the 06 when they won it?
Yeah.
That's insane. All right. Who's got the balls to do it?
Taking the under tonight?
In which one?
Oh, and the only hockey game tonight.
Oh, you wanted? There's no way they could score 15 goals again.
Nah, come on, they're not gonna do 15 again. Colorado, Minnesota, 9-6 was the score on Sunday. Over under 6.5 tonight, huh? Anyone? Any interest?
I'm gonna let you take that one.
You can have fun with that. Just potential note for you. It sounds like Minnesota may be making a goaltending change.
Not Colorado?
I mean, both of them are pretty terrible.
Like that was the other thing is like you blinked. Colorado went up 3-0. I was like, all right, here we go. Here's a hockey blowout. And then if you looked away, like say you like moved from upstairs to downstairs to go to bed and you came back you're like, what? It's tied? How? That all right, does anyone want 15 points too many in Oklahoma City?
I think Oklahoma City can name the score.
I just hope I'm not getting my hopes up.
Of what? A blowout?
Oh, I've got a lot of saved up in the drafts for a couple of my fraternity brothers that are diehard Laker fans.
60% of bets at DraftKings are on the Lakers, plus the points.
Luka's out tonight.
Yeah, he's out the series. Well, he ain't playing.
If he came back game three, would you think anything about it?
Are they down 0-2?
Let's say they're down 0-2, but he's coming back at home.
I mean, I know he got hurt. When did he get hurt? On April 2nd. Was it early in the game? I thought it was later. Because they got absolutely obliterated in that game on April 2nd, too, with Luka. And then he got hurt. I thought it was later in the game.
I thought it was like fourth quarter.
I thought we were like, why is he in the game?
Yeah, I thought that was like a conversation point.
I have a hard time envisioning how the Lakers have success offensively. So, like, I was going to bet. Now, I will say my last handful of NBA bets have just been absolute garbage. And I texted a buddy of mine who I tend to bet with. And I'm like, just remind me, stop betting the NBA. Like, we got it. We had a good draft. Let's just move on, get ready for college football. But I can't help myself. I'm sitting there watching these games. And I got to stop. I bet the Celtics win the East after they destroyed the Sixers in game four. How'd that work out?
Great.
Hawks first half last Thursday. All they did was, you know, trail by a historical margin. And then last night I took the Sixers in the second half. So my gut tells me to bet Lakers team total under. So they'll probably go for like 125 tonight.
But their path to scoring is just jacking up a bunch of threes.
I mean, maybe Luke Kennard makes threes like he did in games one and two because he has been horrific offensively these last four games. Rui was hot in game six, right, from three.
Yes.
He couldn't miss.
Marcus Smart's been pretty hot.
Yeah, that's always a dangerous game to play.
But the other thing is, like, with the Lakers, I feel like they could take advantage of the lack of discipline of Houston. There is no team that is more disciplined defensively than Oklahoma City.
Like, I envision a game, I think the Lakers are in, like, the mid to upper 80s.
Well, I mean, obviously they don't want, like...
They don't want to get into a track meet either.
Correct.
I mean, look, could Reeves do his thing, and he's had a couple extra days to keep getting that quad better? What happened at the end of game six, though? Was that just, did he just get, like, hit wrong? Because he left the game, didn't return.
I don't know, because you could talk me into part of that was precautionary because they had a huge lead. But then the other aspect was like, this is a guy that's playing hurt. But also, we're talking about... I just feel like everything you talk yourself into with the Lakers is... trying to act like the Rockets were a tougher test than they were. And then on the flip side, I don't know. The other thing I was thinking about is maybe in these like these ridiculous 15 and a half point lines, not really, but it does feel like anything under single digits, like if you're just going to bet the dog, it almost just feels like take the money line. It feels like we've had a little bit of NCAA tournament where it's like the teams that have been like these 8-point dogs, they like if they've been covering, they just went outright.
Minnesota last night, Sixers in the last three games.
Like I know the Suns covered two late spreads, but those were high double digits. The Hawks when they were underdogs, they won. Like, when they covered, they won. Like, I don't know. Like that's kind of been the other aspect of it. It's like, who do you really trust tonight in Detroit?
James Harden, of course.
Didn't he also get a little hobbled? Or was he just milking it?
I probably milking it. Can you trust Cade?
I think you can trust Cade. I think the problem is at what point does the Herculean task, like at what point do you start having diminishing returns? Because they are putting everything on him.
So Donovan Mitchell in the Toronto series averaged 23-5-3.
He was also doing a lot of like early work.
In the regular season, he was averaging around 28. So he was not playing up to his regular season standard in that series against Toronto. And never really, I mean, I guess the first two games he played well. In the two games they won. After the first two games, he was, I guess, fine.
So, like, Cade has gone... All right, here's the shot attempts. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
27 in game one. 19 in game two. 23 in game three. 23 in game four. 23 in game five. 23 in game six. And a minuscule 18 in game seven. He has taken 156 shots in a first-round playoff series. He's also gotten to the line 74 times. And it's like, all right, 45 and a 7-point win, 32 and 32 in games six and seven. And he was able to only have 27 in game two, but that was the classic. Orlando stole the first one. The game was going a certain way, and they're like, all right, we'll throttle back. I don't know. That's kind of the other thing with Who is the more interesting threat? Is it Detroit simply because Cade?
I think Cleveland's more of a threat. I don't know. I mean, I was kind of out on Cleveland going into the postseason. And I saying that I have a team with James Harden as your second option as a interesting threat in the postseason is like, come on, man. We've been down this road before.
We know how this story ends.
Right.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, if they don't have that, what is up with bounces in Toronto? That ball went out of the television screen.
I can't believe that ball went in.
Like that, I guess the turnover was bad, but like there was an element of like, well, am I really going to hold it? Like if Cleveland wins that game in Toronto, I feel like, don't you feel a little bit better?
And how are we supposed to feel about Detroit? You were down 22 at halftime to the Magic in an elimination game. Yes, you came back. Did you come back or did the Magic?
Well, I mean, the other thing is, like, if Wagner doesn't get hurt,
right,
are they still here? But maybe there's something to the fact that Orlando plays a similar style to they do, and now, like, you're going to... When you're not just having to sit there and do the, all right, we have to defend Paolo, ISO. But, like, that's the other thing. Detroit, part of the problem was our boy Jalen Duren was not very good in that series. Like, is he going to get better in this series? Because I think they got better interior defense at Cleveland.
Even though Mobley was Allen. Allen was great in game 7.
Yeah, he even got the post-game interview.
Like, do we get more of that? Like, 22-19?
I'm going to say no.
Where did that come from, Mobley?
I'm going to say that one might be an outlier.
Yeah, a little bit.
Going to say that one might.
Three blocks, 19 boards, 22 points.
Yeah, it was a good half for Victor. All right, my man, we'll let you go.
All right, see you, dude.
That is Tim Murray of VSIN. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George. We might have to move this guy up our rankings now that he's got a lot of time on his hands. An exclusive to Front Office Sports, Mark Cuban said he was the one that paid Indiana to sign Fernando Mendoza. During Indiana's college football playoff loss to Notre Dame in 2024, Cuban says he had a talk with Hoosiers AD Scott Dolzin, where he learned about a QB who would be, quote, great in Sig's system. Cuban says that he agreed to fund the deal that day, according to Front Office Sports. Cuban's doing a lot of, let's see, we had the I would never have traded Luka, which I actually believe to be true.
I do believe that. I would buy back the Mavs if I had the money.
Uh-huh.
Now
he's, like, he's basically, he's going to take credit for every Indiana win.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tell these story. Tell your story. My thanks to Tim Murray and Eric Hastein for being with us. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast show after the program ends. For George, for Tim, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.